I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. My guest for the hour today is one of America's most celebrated comedians. Paula Poundstone has spent almost four decades blazing a unique trail in the world of stand-up, from improv clubs in Boston in the late 1970s to her 1992 gig as the first woman to MC the White House Correspondents' Dinner. She's been a regular on late-night TV, and her standout performances at the Comic Relief concerts helped raise millions for the homeless. Many fans also know her from her regular appearances on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, her voiceover roles in animated kids' movies, and her offbeat essays. Paula Poundstone joins us live from Los Angeles. We'll talk about her career as a comedian, actress, and author, and we'll get her singular take on everything from politics to parenting and the secrets of human happiness. Midday with Paula Poundstone starts right after the news. And welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. It's the winter solstice, which means that today is the shortest day of the year for those of us in the Northern Hemisphere. By the way, if you are listening to us in the Southern Hemisphere, God bless you. We hope you enjoy your longest day of the year. From tomorrow until June 21st or so, the days around here will start getting a little longer. And just for kicks, let me remind you that there are 55 days until pitchers and catchers report to training camp for the Orioles. So this whole winter thing, it's virtually done. It's virtually over. And my guest on this shortest day is a comedian, an author, an essayist, an actor who's had a very long and acclaimed career. Paula Poundstone.
You know what, though? I get ants in my apartment here. I can't get rid of the ants. Do you guys have that? It is the weirdest thing, because I don't even keep food in my apartment. And every time I come here, I spray for ants. And when I leave again, I spray for ants. I can't figure out what they're doing in there. To me, this is poor ant leadership. You'd think the head ant would turn to the others and go, you know, fellas, there's no food in there, and many of us have been killed. What do you say we go someplace else? I came back in New Year's. There was a virtual freeway of ants going into my medicine cabinet. I opened the medicine cabinet. They had found one throat lozenge. An entire community of ants on one throat lozenge. Apparently, they had had a little cough. It's funny because I did hear a noise. I just never knew what it was. It'd be real late at night. I'd be trying to sleep right here. What the hell is that? It's the annoying, nagging, hacking cough of an entire community of ants.
Paula Poundstone on the deficiencies in ant leadership. Paula was a fixture on the Boston comedy scene in the late 1970s. She made the move to the left coast, first in San Francisco and then to L.A. in the 1980s. Her work on television, in movies, as an author and as a writer has garnered her many awards and secured for her a fan base that runs the gamut between NPR aficionados to kids who hear her voice in cartoons and movies. Paula Poundstone will be appearing at Ram's Head on stage in Annapolis Friday night. And this afternoon, she joins us from the studios of NPR West in Culver City, California. Welcome to the show. Thanks for your time.
Well, thanks for having me.
So, turns out you and I were both in Boston around the same time. You went to Lincoln Sudbury High School. I went to Dover Sherburn Regional High School.
Oh, for heaven's sake. We were both hyphenated regional schools.
That's right. We used to call it Dover Sherburn Reasonably High School. You know, this was the 70s. It was a different era.
Oh, my gosh, yes. You know, in our town, I was from Sudbury, and Lincoln was the smarter of the two. I mean, they were really the brains of the operation, and thank goodness for them. Now, which were you from, Dover or Sherburn?
I was from Dover.
And which was the superior intellectual town?
Well, you know, it was close, but probably Dover was considered the superior intellectual town. And in Dover Sherburn's defense, the current city state's attorney, the chief lawyer for the city of Baltimore, is also a graduate of Dover Sherburn Regional High School. So,
wow, boy, they are churning them out.
That's right. There's at least one distinguished person from that school. But Lincoln was always, when I lived there, because I was there in high school and then I left and went to college and then I came back for graduate school. And that's where I found myself in Boston in the late 70s when you were bursting onto the scene. But Lincoln was often associated with Concord. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Concord, Mass., you know, the beginning of the war and everything. And I was, in my other life, I'm a musician, and I was the music director of the Concord Chorus. So Concord and Lincoln were two cities that I didn't really ever associate Lincoln and Sudbury. That was an interesting pairing for a regional high school. Yeah.
No, I didn't even know it was there until I went to high school, but I'm telling you, it's where all the brains of the region was. So then how did you end up in Baltimore?
I ended up in Baltimore to take a job with the Baltimore Choral Arts Society in 1982. But I was at Boston University as a grad student studying music from 78 to 82. And in 79, that's when you started doing stand-up in Boston. I ran into, through a friend of a friend, Steve Wright, who was also starting his career as a stand-up comedian. And I went.
We started 2 weeks apart.
2 weeks apart, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know him. We only met a couple of times, but we all headed down to one of those clubs that Barry Crimmins owned. I think it was called the Ding Ho or something like that.
He didn't own it. He didn't own it. He booked the comics there.
Or he booked.
Yeah, a guy named Shun Lee owned it. It was it's a storied room in Cambridge, Mass. There was one of the, you know, I mean, stand-up comedy has been around since, you know, before we came out of the caves. So, we didn't invent it. But there was a renewed interest in stand-up comedy in the late 70s. And Boston is one of the cities that, it's funny because it happened in cities around the country. And I've never known why it happened at the same time in everyone. But anyways, in Boston, this place called the Ding Ho in Inman Square in Cambridge, it was a Chinese restaurant with a kind of oddly Western bar attached to it. It looked like something out of the Big Valley, maybe, which was a long time ago Western television show. A lot of the comics that were at that new beginning of stand-up comedy were townies from Cambridge.
Yeah.
You know, people think of Cambridge because it has MIT and it has Harvard. People think of it as a very sort of intellectual place. But in truth, you know, there's this blue-collar class who've never seen the inside of any of those places. And they, you know, they belong there as much as any. And so these were the guys really that started, stand-up comedy there. And it was very, misogynistic, for one thing.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, of the folks who were working there, I mean, Steve was one of them, and he was certainly a townie. He was from Boston. Bobcat Goldthwait was
there.
But
Steve was like a way outsider.
It
was almost a fluke that he ever went over to those crowds because, I can't even tell you the stuff that went on stage because of the rules of the radio. It was loud. It was drunken. It was to some degree drug generated. It was, I say profane. I don't care about individual words. You know, I don't care about language. But the ideas were pretty limited.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, fun. I got to say, I mean, there was, nights of crazy laughter in those rooms.
Oh, I bet.
And Steve's
act was always this, you know, semi-cerebral thing where he would just sort of, you know, make these bizarre observations about the human condition. And some of them are very subtle.
Steve was the plant in Steve was to stand-up comedy what the little plant that, my word recall is terrible. What's the Pixar movie that's like futuristic? Wall-E.
Okay. Wall-E.
Steve Wright is to stand-up comedy what the little plant was that Wall-E found was to the earth. He was quite unique to anywhere. But particularly there in Boston, it was just amazing that he flourished.
Yeah. Were there any other women in that circuit?
There were, not a lot. People talk all the time about this idea that, you know, women in comedy, people ask me what it's like to be a woman doing stand-up comic as if I have, as if it's a variable I can isolate, I don't know the answer to that question because I've never been anything else.
Sure.
Which means, by the way, that I can pee freely in North Carolina. But
as of today, yeah.
Did they change it?
They changed. Well, they're in the process. They're close.
Oh, good for them. Yeah. They should. I was just there, and I must tell you, I did not bring my birth certificate with me. And yet, you know, it's an absurd notion that someone's going to stop you going into the bathroom. I don't know whose job that would be. Maybe it's more of a jobs plan than anything else for them. But I'm glad to hear that.
Well, it certainly has its effect on the economic well-being of North Carolina. I mean, they had all sorts of people deciding not to not only go to the bathroom there, but not to do anything else there, like the NCAA and, you know, the NBA and other people like that. So perhaps that
had
more.
Good for them.
Did you consider at any time, you know, not going? I mean, there have been a few sort of high-profile folks who said, "Oh, I'm not playing North Carolina."
You know, honestly, I didn't. And probably for the most selfish of reasons. Well, the first reason was I didn't even think about it. The first reason was I had this job. It was on my books, I think somebody tweeted me something about it not too long before I went, and I went, oh, my gosh, yeah. I hadn't even thought about it.
Sure.
Because I'm, you know, just wandering around half awake in my own world. And so part of it was that it was really too close, I think, to sort of, you know, pull out without damaging innocent people in the, you know. And the other thing is, yeah, if the NBA or the NCAA pull out, that's going to have an effect. If I pull out,
It will affect a few people. Yeah, right.
A handful
badly
of people that really don't deserve, right. It's not a big statement. And I had just come off of, I was working in Baton Rouge, and as it got close to that date, and I went, oh my gosh, I'm working in Baton Rouge, and they have this flooding, so I said, you know, don't pay me, then when it came close to the North Carolina date, I'm like, okay, how many of these weeks where I don't get paid are a good idea?
Right.
There's
that whole eating and paying the rent thing. Yeah, sure.
As it turns out, you know, my son had the nerve to ask me one time what he gets when I die, and I said, debt, and I want you to have it, honey.
And someday, all the debt will be yours. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'll tell you something. This could make me an excellent candidate for president because apparently—
The folks who do debt are very high on the list in this current administration.
I was hearing Newt Gingrich be interviewed this morning on, I think it was on NPR, and he was talking about how we're in a situation that we've never been in before. He said there's never been such a wildly successful individual in the presidency as it's about. So we don't really have the right rules to address this conflict of interest with the president. I would say that what success is open to debate.
Indeed.
But anyways, the fact that I have nothing but debt would certainly make me more easily fit into the role of president, I think.
That's right. I mean, it wouldn't hurt if you'd had debt plus, you know, a few billion dollars in your portfolio. But, you know, still, I mean, I think, you know, you'd have a lot to offer the administration, that's for sure.
I don't even have a savings account because I don't know my mom's maiden name. So in this finance world, I'm a little bit behind. You know, I realize that I have a tendency to leap from topic to topic, which as an interviewer, I think it must be a little bit like maybe if you were like a cattle driver and there were some strays that just kept running off.
No, it's fine with me. I mean, I've always thought of interviewing as, you know, akin to going hunting with Dick Cheney. You know, I mean, the shots just get scattered and you just never know where they're going to land, you know. So it's fine with me.
In the day that happened, I was in New York.
We should remind people what we're talking about, which is that
The day that Dick Cheney's friend shot him in Dick Cheney shot his friend in the face while they were hunting.
Right.
And I was in New York. I had flown. I had flown to the East Coast and done a job somewhere on the East Coast. And New York City had, at that time, the biggest snowstorm they'd ever had, like, in a certain period of time. It was very fast. It wasn't long, but it was like the sky just dumped a ton of snow quickly. And when I realized I wasn't going to be able to fly into JFK, I decided, well, I'll take a train because maybe the train will make it. And indeed I did. I made it into JFK, and I was supposed to be doing a photo session for a book that I had coming out at the time.
Where did you take the train from? How far away from JFK?
Well, I think it was in Albany, maybe, uh-huh. The night before.
So you were in the vicinity, yeah. Uh-huh.
I was in the vicinity, but I consider myself a mastermind for outwitting the snow and getting into the city. And so as the train is pulling in, I call the photographer and I say, you know, I'm almost there. And he goes, what are you talking about? And I'm like, well, you know, I'm almost, you know, the first, excuse me, he said, Paula, we can't move. You know, he said, no one can get in. None of my employees can get in. He said, no, we have to cancel the photo session. So now I'm in a place that's just been clubbed by snow, and now the issue is getting out. And when I went to United Airlines, it was literally like it was closed.
Right.
I've never seen that before. Like, it was the middle of the day, and there was just
We're hanging it up for the day. It's snowing outside.
So
we're going
like,
home.
Okay, this is a bad day for me. So I end up standing, I don't know, somewhere in the airport. Eventually I get to a place, and, you know, everybody's trying to get out of there. And it's, you know, huge crowds of people lining up one place, lining up another, just standing. And I look up on the screen. So not a good day. And I look up on the screen, and here is this story of Dick Cheney shooting his friend in the face. And I thought, you know what?
A gift from heaven.
This is the only enjoyable thing that has happened today. And I, you know, how many, by the way, do you remember that a few, maybe a week after that happened or a couple days after that happened, his friend did a press conference and apologized.
Right. For being in the way of the bullets.
And I thought, you know, how many people are in jail right now watching television and go, geez.
If only my victim had apologized.
Yeah, exactly.
It could have turned out a whole lot better.
Yeah, the guy I shot prosecuted. What kind of bad luck is that?
It's midday on 88.1 WYPR. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on the program, Baltimore City Health Commissioner Lena Wen joins me for our monthly Health Watch. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick will be here with her review of the new show at the Everyman Theater. It's the local premiere of Dot by Coleman Domingo. That's coming up on midday Thursday. My guest today is Paula Poundstone, who joins us from NPR West in Culver City, California. You are welcome to join us as well after we take a quick break. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here at Midday. Our email address, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. More with Paula Poundstone when we come back after this break.
Election Day, actually, when Bush was elected, was one of the most depressing days of my entire life, I think. I mean, partly because I simply don't want him to be president, you know, but also because everybody else seemed okay with it. I was kind of lonely, really, that day, I think. I couldn't figure out how I'd gone so far afield from my fellow men. You know, I kept trying to figure out maybe there's something everyone else does that I don't do or something I do that no one else does that would set us apart like that. And you know what I think it is? I don't eat nuts at all. I've given this a good deal of thought. I firmly believe that there's something they're putting in nuts that would cause people to vote for Bush. Because not only do I not eat nuts, but they're always trying to get me to. I'll be on a plane and the stewardess goes by the little snack cart. I go, no nuts for me, thank you. I fall asleep, I wake up again, there's a little foil pouch of nuts in my lap. Don't you think that's a little odd?
On 88.1 WIPR, it's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. A clip from Paula Poundstone's 1990 HBO special reflecting on the election of the first President Bush. If you're just joining us today, the acclaimed comedian and author Paula Poundstone is my guest. Among other things, she's a regular guest on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And on Friday night, she'll be appearing at Ram's Head on stage in Annapolis. You are welcome to join us on this midday Tuesday. Is it today or Wednesday? Today's Wednesday. It is midday Wednesday. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org. And our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. So we plumbed the archives a little bit there, Paula, for that little clip.
I don't even remember that, but I was listening to that thinking, trying to figure out where I was going with it there for a little bit. Now that I've heard it, okay, yeah, I do vaguely remember saying that, but yeah, that was plumbing the archives. I've been working at home with an organizer going through, you know, I just saved stuff. I don't know why. You know, I think at one point I, whatever. So I've been working with an organizer and have found.
Do you have like scripts or do you have actual tape or CDs or DVDs?
I have all three sometimes. I have, articles that I used to write everything by hand. I still write a lot of things by hand, but I just kept all of it. I don't know why. I don't know what I thought was going to happen that would make those things, you know, like, oh, I was going to read them again someday. Likely not.
Maybe your kids would be interested in it. Maybe there would be the Paula Poundstone archive somewhere, the University of somewhere.
Oh, yeah, might be send my papers to the university. The idea that there's going to be some sort of Paula Poundstone. Step over here.
Right next to the JFK Library in Boston. I get this,
yeah, exactly.
A little hut, you know.
Make your way through those soda cans. Yes, this is where she slept. It's so good to get rid. I want it so that when I die, people always talk about we have elderly parents and they die. You know, I think they have to go, clean out their things. And I don't want to add that extra burden onto my children.
So you're cleaning out now, huh?
Yeah. Onto my children who are already annoyed with me, I think, just perpetually and have been since they were born. Just over everything, They used to be mad because we're atheists, so they were always mad that we didn't celebrate Easter, of all things. I said, first of all,
Easter.
It's not part of our beliefs. Yeah. I don't know. I think just Easter looked good to them, because other people were doing it and they weren't.
It's chocolate. That's a lot of chocolate involved. What's the downside? Do you do Christmas? Do you do anything around this time of year?
We do. Well, I told them we don't do Easter because it's not part of our beliefs. In the first place, I said. Secondly, you don't like eggs, and thirdly, you don't look for anything. I said, Happy Easter. Go find your socks. And this didn't go over well. We do Christmas, I feel, for the Santa Claus part of the story, not for the, right. Not for the, and I love them. I got to say, I love the music. Although one year I decided, I always had a rule that I didn't start until at least a week into December, playing Christmas music. But one year I got a little carried away and I decided to start the day after Thanksgiving. But what I figured I would do is play not my favorite albums yet, and it was that year that I learned that no matter who is singing the songs, it's the same 12 songs.
It is. There's a limited repertoire. As a musician, I can tell you it's a pretty limited repertoire. And there are some versions of some of the songs that really should have been banned legislatively. I mean, Bruce Springsteen, Santa Claus is Coming to Town. It's an outrage to the art of music by a gentleman.
Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
By Mr. Springsteen.
Springsteen.
No, not me.
I do.
Love the Chia Pet commercials. Those I'll go with. I like that. I like the Chia Pet commercials. But Mr. Springsteen had, in my humble opinion, had no business covering that song. And he's brilliant in every other aspect. So that's
because you're a choral music guy.
Well,
so this is your big season.
Could be.
Right? But,
yeah.
How many... How many messiahs do you go to this year?
I never go to any of them. I conduct them all over the place,
and you do.
You know, so I'm right in the middle of the mix. But you know, and true. I mean, for the choral musicians, I mean, if we could have Christmas four times a year, we'd never have to raise any money. It would be terrific. But I don't know. I mean, to think that you know, some of the albums that I've done, Christmas albums or Christmas concerts, are competing with Springsteen's "Santa Claus Is Coming to Town." It's disconcerting. It's disconcerting to me.
I have a confession to make to you as a choral music conductor. Pretty much every time I've been in a round of Row, Row, Row Your Boat, I start with one group and jump ship somewhere. I get lost, and I just join in the second group.
You're a migrant when it comes to canons. Very good.
That's exactly right.
410-662-8780 is the number to call to join Paula Poundstone, my guest today here on Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Our email is midday@wipr.org and our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. So we heard this little clip from your HBO special, and you won a big award for that, or the Ace Cable Award back in the day, talking about the first.
I don't think that's a big award, by the way.
Well, it's
the cable. It was a cable award.
Bigger than any award I've ever gotten, so I'm impressed.
It was back when cable was, the fledgling, probably won't make it newcomer. And now, of course, some of the best programming on television is on cable. And so at a certain point, they realized they were ghettoizing themselves by even having the Ace Awards, and so they got rid of it.
Well, but at least they gave you one before they did that. That's nice.
Exactly right. Before they checked out, man, I grabbed one or two.
Why not? I mean, that's one of the things that's so different about the scene now than in the 1990s when you were doing a lot of HBO specials and stuff. There are so many young comics now, and there are a bunch of folks who really do think that now, this very moment, is kind of the halcyon days of comedy because so many people are able to introduce their work to folks through streaming services. So Netflix has all these comedy specials, and HBO and Showtime and all these other streaming services, Amazon. There are a lot of folks who can get their stuff out there in a way that you really couldn't do. I mean, back when you were being booked for the HBO comedy specials, they were not handing those things out to everybody. It was a very select group.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and even a little bit before that, before there was cable, I grew up, there were three television stations. And and the Tonight Show
and
was
And then UHF.
Yeah. My neighbors had UHF. We didn't, but my neighbors did. It was very, when it had like local syndicated channels, right?
Yeah.
My neighbors had that.
And before Fox was Fox, that's where you watched, you know, that programming, that precursor was on UHF channels as opposed to VHF, which was ABC, NBC, and CBS. Yeah.
I never really understood it. All I know, one thing that I find curious about the world of entertainment is that when I was growing up, there were three channels. Now, when I stay in a hotel, I mean, we don't have cable at home, but if I stay in a hotel and I put the TV on, there's sometimes like 200 channels.
Yeah.
And there's less to watch than there was when there were three channels. How is that scientifically possible?
Right. It seems to defy the law of physics. I agree. Yeah. We want to go to the phones. Barbara in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Paula Poundstone.
Thank you for taking my call. My sister-in-law goes to the Kabbalah Center in New York City. And when we go up to Manhattan, we often go with her. And one time when I was there, I saw Paula, and I mean, you weren't doing an act or anything, but I saw you in the congregation. And so I'm wondering what the draw is for you for Kabbalah, considering you said you don't celebrate, you know, the religious holidays.
I was wondering
if you could talk a little bit about that.
I feel really bad right now because it may be that nothing you've ever experienced was what you thought it was at the time. I've never been to the Kabbalah Center. I am a hard, fast atheist. I you must have seen someone else.
Oh, a Paula Poundstone lookalike at the Kabbalah Center.
My avatar who looked oddly like me because, no, I've never been there. I don't even know anything about it other than, I think, something about Madonna, right? Wasn't she?
It's I think rooted in Jewish mysticism and stuff. Yeah, and Madonna
was a devotee
for a bit. Yeah, I'm not sure she still is.
Yeah, I've never been to such a thing. Although I have been to the occasional Seder, but only strictly socially, and because I do enjoy the bitter tears.
Who among us doesn't enjoy the bitter tears? That's right. Well, Barbara, I'm sorry that we burst that little bubble there, but thank you for your call. We appreciate your joining us here on Midday. I mean, that's interesting, Paula. I mean, when I saw this call come up on the screen, I thought, well, if Paula was trying to get herself a gig at the Kabbalah Center, that is one crazy room to play. That's pretty impressive.
Is it? No, I don't know anything about it, but apparently there's somebody like me going there, you know, casting aspersions. Yeah, no, I don't believe in, I believe in you. That's who I believe in. I believe in my fellow man. I don't have a higher power.
Yeah. Well, I want to, you certainly have a lot of power when it comes to doing your act, and you're known for rarely, if ever, doing the same act twice. Do you improv every night when you're doing stand-up? I mean, do you just sort of walk out kind of without a plan and just see what happens? How does it work?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I've been doing this job for 37 years. So somewhere rattling around in my head, there is 37 years worth of material. I figure it's a little bit like one of those booths at an arcade where you step in, it's like a glass booth, and they blow money all around you, and whatever you can grab, you can keep. I think that's sort of my material while I'm on stage. In my head, it's sort of blowing around, and if I can catch it, I can say it. My favorite part of the night, I mean, I have the majority of my quote-unquote material is autobiographical, I guess. It's about, you know, what I think and what I did and my experiences. But my favorite part of the night is just talking to the audience. I do the time-honored, where are you from, what do you do for a living? And in this way, little biographies emerge, and I use that from which to set my sails. And so by its very nature, someone will say something, and it'll either remind me of something, you know, that I've thought of before, or not, and the conversation just sort of takes place just like any other conversation.
I mean, you've written books, which obviously you're writing down. You've written essays. You had a column in Mother Jones for a while, and you've written essays in, you know, L.A. Times and other publications. So obviously those are written down. Do you write jokes the way so many comics do? I mean, we see, you know, the sort of stereotypical image of a comic is filling up legions full of index cards with jokes, and some of them even bring them out and put them on the stool next to them while they're on stage. I mean, do you write down the jokes, or do you just let them swish around in your head and see what happens once you get out on a stage?
A little bit of both, I guess. A little bit of both. You know, unfortunately, for the most part, what I do is jot down a couple of words that remind me of the piece. So yesterday, while I was working with the organizers, I mean, I had a trunk that was like a big trunk that was just full of those, you know, like papers and folders of material that I had done. The problem is that... you know, I might write down, like, provocative nipples. Well, you know, when I look at that...
That can go so many directions. Yeah,
right. Yeah, when I look at that 30 years later, I don't any longer remember what... And maybe I never did remember. Maybe I wrote it down once and it never, you know, and it never came up again. I have no idea. Some stuff is written out in its entirety. Not much, but some is. And then other stuff, it'll just be one or two words to remind me. And I guess what I concluded yesterday, because in the end I put the majority of those papers into the recycle, because I realized, like, okay, even if I trudged through all this to find stuff that maybe I thought of a long time ago and I never did it, you know, the problem is I felt like, you know what? I'll think of new stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have some faith that something...
That the well won't run dry. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Which, by the way, is a constant nightmare that I do have.
Of course.
You know, it's like when someone says, you know, there's only X amount of notes. You know, it is... And, how many comics are there? And how many years have things been going on? I mean, we do... You know, it is hard to some degree to be unique and fresh in this line of work. But... if I felt like the well was going to run dry, then I guess I just couldn't do it anymore, which is one of the really fun things about the way that I work. You know, I find no matter who I talk to in the audience, if I leave my metaphorical fishing line out there long enough, I get the greatest stuff out of people.
Sure.
Everybody's terrific once you get them talking.
Paula Poundstone joins us on the line from NPR West in Culver City, California. You are welcome to join us as well here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. We'll have lots more with Paula Poundstone when we return after a quick break. Stay with us.
But I did last spring go to a Seder, and I must say, Peter, I know you're Jewish. You guys eat some unhappy foods.
Unhappy foods?
Well, very. I mean the matzah. I said to the people, "Go, you know what this needs? Leavening." If you're partying once a week, do you have time to put all the ingredients in a happy food? No.
What's interesting is that Paula herself is the answer to the question, why is this night different from all other nights?
Paula Poundstone and Peter Sagal on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. I'm Tom Hall. We are delighted to be spending this hour with Paula Poundstone, who joins us from NPR West in Culver City, California. She'll be appearing at Ram's Head on stage in Annapolis Friday night, first show at 6:30, and they've just added a second show that starts at 9:30. You are welcome to join us this afternoon. 410-662-8780 is our phone number, our email, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle if you want to drop us a tweet, @MiddayTomHall. So there you go with your recollections of your Seder, Paula. And we have a fan on the line here, Frank in Aberdeen, who is a Wait, Wait fan. Frank, welcome to the program with Paula Poundstone.
Yes, sir. I love you, Paula. You are my favorite Wait, Wait person.
Thank you, Frank.
I do have one question. Now that Trump is in office, do you need to expand the show to 2 hours?
I think we're going to have to. I think, you know, the truth is, Frank, we, you know, all right, I hate to give away the magic, but we tape the show and it does get edited. When I'm on, we go for 2 hours.
Yes.
And
so
Peter,
you may be Frank's favorite, but you're not the producer's favorite at Wait, Wait. Is that what you're saying?
They have a computer program for their editing that they program it like anytime it hears my voice to cut. Apparently when I'm there, the show is much longer than when I am not there, is what I'm told. One time I was riding in a cab somewhere, and cab drivers tend to be familiar with Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me because they listen to the radio while they work. And so I was riding a cab somewhere, and the cab driver recognized my voice, and he said, "Are you Paul Pound?" So I said, "Yeah, I am." And he said, "Oh, I love Wait, Wait." I said, "Oh, thank you." And he said, "Today," this is a while back, he goes, "Today they had on Bill Clinton." And I was so mad that they had Bill Clinton without me. So I went to Peter. I go, Peter, why would you have Bill Clinton without me? And he said, Paula, if we had you and Bill Clinton on, we'd still be on the air. Apparently, both Mr. Clinton and I are a bit verbose.
Evidently. Evidently. But verbose in a lovely way. Well, Frank, thank you for your call. I mean, Trump.
I was really hoping, Tom, that you were going to have every caller ask me, like, every caller say that they had seen me in some different religious experience, you know, after
well,
the woman who thought I'd been
I remember see. I remember seeing you at the Vatican in 1997.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, Paula,
you're,
why?
You're inching
why
up the line trying to get a meet the Pope thing. And yeah. You know, I have a vague recollection of that. I can't guarantee it, but, you know.
Yeah, Paula, wasn't that you I saw at my son's bris? No, I don't think it was. I don't think it was.
Well, you know.
Boy, you know what? I forgot about the Pope. Well, I mean, I didn't forget about the Pope, but I forgot about the Pope coming here. Because, you know, one of my wait coworkers, when the Pope was here, whenever that was it last spring or something?
Yeah, it came to Philadelphia and D.C. and yeah.
Yeah, I was in a hotel room somewhere, and I don't know. For company, I had the television on. I don't much care about the Pope one way or the other, but there he was, and he was gonna, you know, do a service at Madison Square Garden, and I look up on the screen, and there's this guy who looks just like Mo Rocca, like doing some sort of pre-Pope thing, at Madison Square Garden, and I tweeted, "Oh my gosh, Mo Rocca's opening for the Pope," and I was kidding, and you know what? It was Mo Rocca.
He opened for the Pope?
He did. He opened for the Pope. I'm so stupid.
Impressive.
He read some thing. I thought it was Latin. It turned out it was Spanish. But he read some, I don't know, popey thing, some part of the Catholic
Good
ceremony.
For him.
He read in an Espanol.
See, yeah. That's the kind of gig. You get that gig, you call up Mom right away. Mom, I just got hired. I'm opening for the Pope. You know,
opening for the Pope.
That's pretty good.
Well, you know, because of my atheist status, these are the kinds of jobs that will never come my way.
Exactly. Yeah. Chances of your opening for the Pope not high, or you're getting booked at the Kabbalah Center in New York, you know, much to the chagrin of some of our listeners.
Every now and then I'll be contacted by some sort of atheist group that has meetings, and they want to know if I'll, you know, participate. I go, okay, look, at one of the joys of being an atheist is that we don't meet once a week.
Yeah, right.
You know, we don't
the whole meeting thing. That's the whole point. That's right.
Exactly. We don't sit on a hard bench, you know. I went to a friend's because I was raised Methodist, so I certainly have had the experience of, you know, being a kid in church. I went to a memorial for a friend of mine that was held at a church in Sudbury actually a few weeks ago, and there I was sitting on a church bench in Sudbury, Massachusetts, and you know I still couldn't sit still and be quiet. I'm 56. I shop at Forever 56, and I still cannot. That's just not a thing I can do. It's not something that my body was designed for.
Forever 56. No wonder none of my clothes fit. I'm a few years older. Oh, my gosh. Now you've helped me figure this out, Paula. That's really good. 410-662-8780 is our number. midday@wypr.org is our email. @midday. Tom Hall is our Twitter handle. Larry in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Paula Poundstone.
Hi, how you doing today?
Good, thanks.
Hey, Larry, good.
Hey, I saw you at the Lyric one night, 10, 15 years ago, and you did one of your ad-lib things. It was so hilarious. As people were coming in late, you attacked them nicely and asked why they were late and how dare them come late to your show. And I was actually up in the balcony, and a young couple came in, and you saw them come in, and you looked up at them and you said, "And why are you so late?" It was a Saturday night. And she said, to tie into your atheism, she said, "We're Jewish and we couldn't drive until after sundown," and it left you speechless.
Wow. Well, that's a rare moment,
yeah,
I would say.
I would imagine.
For me to be speechless. Yeah, that's...
Well, Larry,
wow.
Thank you for your call. Steve is calling from somewhere on I-95. Welcome to Midday with Paula Poundstone. I hope you're driving safely or even pulled over. Better yet.
Well, we just pulled over this second, the moment we saw we had a chance. Thank
you. Hey, Steve.
So, Paula, you know, you're amazing and wonderful, and I got two quick questions. One, who do you have the most fun with on Wait, Wait. And two, I know, you know, comedians don't always like to talk about other people, but will you talk a little bit about Robin Williams?
Yes to both. You know, Wait, Wait is so much fun. The truth is, everybody there, we don't, it's pretty egoless. You know, nobody, when one person thinks of a joke and they toss it out there, everybody else just sort of jumps on the bandwagon and adds on to it. And a lot of times nobody really very well remembers where it started, which is part of the joy of doing Wait, Wait. So everybody there is lots and lots of fun. There have been times where I thought that they were going to have to separate me and Adam Felber because we just got laughing so hard, you know, at something that we were unable to.
And some of that show is scripted, obviously, but the joke parts are all improvised by all of you, right?
Well, nothing is scripted for the panelists. For those who don't know, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a weekly news quiz show, and there's three panelists each week, and we vie for the mantle, I suppose, of most informed, and we answer questions about the week's news and make jokes. There's a section of the show called Bluff the Listener. And what happens is...
Yeah, you read stories that could be true, but maybe not, and they have to find the one that is actually true.
Right. And we're told the true story the night before, and two of us are assigned to write fake stories for ourselves.
Oh, you guys write those?
Yeah, we do.
Good for you.
I always complain, too, because I just never have really enjoyed homework. But, I'm a big whiner about it. But then there's a section at the, so that we do ahead of time, but there's a section at the end of the show, where Bill says like, well, Petal, if any of these things happen, we'll talk about it next week. Oh, wait, don't tell me. The joke right there, that's called the prediction. And that we're told what the question is. It'll be something like, you know, this week we found out that, Trump partnered with Putin on blah, blah, blah. What'll he partner with him on next? That sort of. Right.
It's the tease for the next show, sort of kind.
Yeah.
Right.
And Stephen, in answer to your other request.
About Robin Williams.
I am always happy to talk about Robin Williams. He's one of the most generous people I ever knew.
Your first appearance on Saturday Night Live was because Robin Williams set that up when he was hosting. Is that not right?
That's right. Yeah, I went on. I just did stand up. As far as I don't know that they've ever done that before or since. Actually, he was hosting and he brought me on just to do stand up, and I did, and it was a long time ago. It was the Eddie Murphy cast.
Yeah.
So it was a long, long time ago.
The 80s, yeah.
He did lots of nice things for me, but the truth is that is not unique to me. He did stuff for lots and lots of people. He introduced him and Dana Carvey both introduced me to their management, and this is part of how I ended up coming to L.A. and
sure.
Getting
well, Paula Pounsett, I'm sorry, but that's all we have time for today, and I very much appreciate your generosity of spirit and time today, and look forward to seeing you in Annapolis on Friday night. Thanks so much.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Paula Poundstone will be appearing at Ram's Head on stage in Annapolis Friday night. Two shows, 6:30 and 9:30. We've got a link with details on our website, wypr.org/midday. Her new book is due out next spring. It's called The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness. That'll do it for us today. Tomorrow, it's Health Watch on Midday with Baltimore Health Commissioner Dr. Lena Wen. She'll get us up to speed on what public health challenges we are facing as a new mayoral administration gets settled in and as we anticipate approaches to public health in a Trump administration. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick has a review of the new show at Baltimore's Everyman Theater, Dot, by Coleman Domingo. I hope you can join us tomorrow at noon for the Thursday edition of midday. Lunch today was provided by the Baltimore Chef Shop on the Avenue in Hamden, offering a variety of private events and cooking classes for kids and adults, including baking and international cuisines. On December 29th, they're offering a class on Mediterranean menus. More on the web at BaltimoreChefShop.com. Thanks for listening. Looking forward to seeing you tomorrow. Future City is up next with Wes Moore after a break for the news. I'm Tom Hall. Have a great day.